El Sistema is an acclaimed classical music education program that was founded in Venezuela by José Antonio Abreu. He believed that music could change poor children's lives. Tricia Tunstall has written a book, Changing Lives, about El Sistema, its founder, and its most famous graduate, conductor Gustavo Dudamel. Jamie Bernstein is co-producer of a documentary, El Sistema USA, and one of the people featured in the film is Stanford Thompson. His play on Philly program at Francis de Sales School in West Philadelphia is based on the El Sistema philosophy. Here's a scene from the film where Thompson is talking with his students at a rehearsal.
The reason we do this every day is to give you guys the opportunity to sound as good as possible, so that you get on that stage and they respect you because of how well you play your instruments. And I refuse to put you guys on any stage, anywhere, in front of an audience that would sit there and say, oh, that's so cute. They're little black kids from West Philadelphia playing classical music.
Oh.
I want them to look at you guys and say, wow, these kids can play.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, joining us on Radio Time, Stanford Thompson, Jamie Bernstein, and Tricia Tunstall. Stanford Thompson is a trumpeter, executive director of Play on Philly, a graduate of the Curtis Institute and the New England Conservatory. Stanford Thompson, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great, thank you.
Nice to have you here. We've been chasing you actually for a couple of months now, just so you know. Jamie Bernstein is a concert narrator, writer, broadcaster, wrote and narrated The Bernstein Beat, a concert about her father, composer, conductor Leonard Bernstein's popular education series, Young People's Concerts. Jamie Bernstein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
And I loved your father's concerts.
Me too.
And Tricia Tunstall also with us. She's a writer, musician, music educator, operates a piano studio in New York City area, and author of this new book, Changing Lives. And Tricia Tunstall, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great to be here.
Let me begin with you, if I could, Tricia, just to talk about this El Sistema philosophy. What's at the root of this philosophy, this music philosophy?
At the root of the philosophy is really the vision of a very extraordinary man, as you said, José Antonio Abreu, who saw a very long time ago in Venezuela, 35 years ago, who saw something critical about the power of music, music education, and specifically the power of children playing together in ensembles to change their lives, to change their families' lives, to change their communities' lives, and particularly to reach children who were in poverty. So part of the El Sistema vision, it's really for all children, but it definitely focuses on the neediest children.
And what's interesting is
he's still going really strong.
So he's a musician and he's an economist, yes. Which maybe explains this philosophy to some degree.
That's right. He was really highly schooled in economics. He was very highly skilled violinist and pianist and conductor. He studied graduate school in the States in economics, and he also was part of the government in Venezuela at that time. So he really knew both angles. And what he saw back in 1975 was that Venezuelan young musicians didn't get a chance to play anywhere. The orchestras in Caracas were all populated by foreigners. And so you could go through conservatory and become an excellent musician and come out and have no place to play. So his first impulse was to start an orchestra where Venezuelan kids could play together.
And it was a very humble beginning in a garage with 11 people.
That's the legend, and I heard it from his own lips, so it's a true story as well as a legend. There were 11 young musicians in that garage the first night. He was very discouraged, and he said, "Let me tell you my vision of a youth orchestra of Venezuelans. Please come back and please bring your friends." And so the next night there were 25, and the next night there were 40, and in a week there were 70, and he had a youth orchestra.
And I guess the most famous person associated with this program is Gustavo Dudamel.
Yes.
And he's now the conductor in California, the Los Angeles
That's right.
Philharmonic.
That's right. He became the conductor of the Los Angeles Philharmonic at the age of 27. He started conducting his own orchestra in Venezuela, the National Youth Symphony of Venezuela, at the age of 18. Mm-hmm. So he was definitely a prodigious talent, but he was nurtured all the way through by the Sistema.
Stanford, let me turn to you, and you have described the first time you saw Dudamel actually conducting an orchestra, a youth orchestra in Venezuela. What did you see?
Well,
what struck you?
Well, I saw a group of kids that all had something to say, something very profound through the instruments. I will also say that I was very skeptical. You know, I got there. You know, this was a year after I finished at the Curtis Institute. And, of course, I'm sitting there comparing, you know, this orchestra to what I was playing with. And I was sitting there thinking, oh, yeah, that string section, it wasn't as together. You know, that bass section wasn't that much in tune. But it took me a while to realize that what was happening, you know, in front of my face was something that was profound. You know, I looked around me. I saw this very diverse community really, you know, consuming what an orchestra stands for. And in my opinion, after seeing that, it was just like, well, we need to do that here.
And an orchestra is a group of people, right? It's not individuals.
Right. And as Jose Abreu says, you know, he believes it's the perfect model of what a community should look like. You know, it's a community where you sit down in agreement, you know, to work with one another and to have one voice.
Let me turn to you, Jamie Bernstein, with the famous last name. And as I said, I remembered your father's Young People's Concerts. But as someone who comes from this musical family, what do you see in El Sistema?
Well, my first exposure to El Sistema was very odd. It was on my computer. Somebody had posted a YouTube video of Gustavo Dudamel conducting this youth orchestra in the Mambo from my dad's West Side Story. And I pretty much fell on the floor. I had never seen such energy and exuberance and joy and passion in kids making music. And by the way, they sounded unbelievable. And who was that curly-headed conductor who was so reminiscent of my dad?
Yes, exactly.
And so I just had to find out what it was all about, because the energy that I saw in that YouTube video was my father's energy. This was everything he ever meant, because he really believed that music had the power to transform the lives of young people. And his energy was so much about that. And here was something that he should know about. And of course, he was not around anymore. So I began by finding out on his behalf, in a way.
It's not easy to transform the lives of young people, Tricia.
It's not easy. It takes incredible amount of dedication. I mean, the elements of Abreu's vision that I think are so important about that are several. One is, you never think of music education apart from the social aspect. You're always doing those two things together. Children in an orchestra are playing, they're learning music, they're also learning to be together, they're learning to be in harmony both personally and musically. Another element is that you do it all the time. You do it every day.
6 days a week, 12 hours a day.
6 days a week. So that, and that the reason that's so important is that you really create an alternative world for these children, which is something that they desperately need. And that world has trusted adults who are training them, encouraging them, and giving them a sense of their own value. It has peers who turn into friends. It has people they can learn from, and it has people they can teach. So that world becomes a very complete world, which enables them to really become who they are and gives them an amazing alternative to what they find in the streets.
Stanford, I'd love to have you talk a little bit about Play on Philly. It's at Francis de Sales School, which is in West Philadelphia. For our listeners, describe that neighborhood.
Well, I mean, the immediate neighborhood around St. Francis de Sales consists of lots of young families. You know, you'll see lots of Penn professors. But where our students come from, I mean, they come from, you know, further south and further west from the immediate neighborhood around 47th and Baltimore. And, you know, what we see is that they come from a completely different environment. And what St. Francis de Sales does is that it provides these children an opportunity to be safe and to learn and to be challenged. So, you know, applying our program there at the school, it was a perfect fit that we could extend what the great work that happens at the school during the school day into the after school hours. You know, engaging kids during a time where, you know, they would be idle and that they might be able, that they might be getting into things they shouldn't.
It's not easy to play the violin.
Yes.
I mean, trumpet. I mean, it's not easy to play even halfway well.
Right. But there are a lot of things that we thought weren't easy. You know, we were going to this community and saying, we want to start an orchestra program, and we want you to be there every day, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for the entire school year and a large portion of the summer. And we're going to learn classical music. We're going to learn Beethoven and Brahms, and we're going to play some Bernstein and Copland. I mean, we're going to
and
do...
And some Rocky theme music.
Oh, and a little bit of Rocky, yes. And so we were really scared. Would the kids sign up? You know, would they stay in the program? Would people embrace this? And every fear that we had, we proved ourselves wrong.
The kids were there. I mean, we see. I saw a little bit of your documentary, which you're still working on, obviously. What do you see as you're filming this program in West Philadelphia? What do you see going on there?
Well, we were there with our cameras on day one of this program. So, and that was a year and a half ago, and we've been coming back, you know, once or twice a month ever since, and just filming, and getting deeper and deeper into the story of the kids and the school and the program and the community. And so it's going to take us a while to tell this story, mm-hmm. because you can't tell how a program affects a community except over time. It's like a piece of music. It exists over time. So I'm thinking that we'll need at least 3 or 4 years to really start to be able to tell this story.
Where it feels like there's a coherent narrative in a way.
Yes, and where you actually see how the program is directly affecting the kids in the program as well as their families. And we're focusing in on a few of the kids and starting to really learn about the world that they live in. And you know, it's an eye-opener. And the more you find out, the more you understand how they cling to this program as something that's really going to give them confidence and hope for their future.
And why classical music, Stanford?
Well, mainly because I love it.
I mean, fair enough.
Well, I mean, there's lots of great music out there. And, you know, my thing has always been about sharing my love for classical music. And it's one thing that I never knew really how to do. I mean, how do you compel somebody to really pay attention and to really care about what myself and many of my colleagues do? And the only way I know how to do it is say, look, hold this instrument, come hang out with me, and you'll figure out exactly why we all love this stuff so much. So, I mean, there's this component of us being able to get all 110 of our kids in one room together and to use the orchestra as that, you know, as that conduit.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's Stanford Thompson. He's a trumpeter, executive director of Play on Philly. Jamie Bernstein is with us as well, a concert narrator, writer, broadcaster. She's doing a film about Play on Philly, a film called El Sistema USA. And Tricia Turnstall has written a book called Changing Lives, Gustavo Dudamel, El Sistema, and the Transformative Power of Music. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY is provided by Interact Theater and the Philadelphia premiere of Microcrisis, a scathing new satire about Wall Street, using the Nobel Prize-winning concept of microcredit to ravage the world economy, telling the rapid-fire story of a slick, big-vision banker and his gaggle of innocent do-gooders. Microcrisis takes a humorously panoramic view of global finance as the banker and his unwitting accomplices try desperately to stay one step ahead of the game. Tickets and information at interacttheater.org.
Hello, I'm Christine Dempsey.
And I'm Ed Cunningham.
You may remember us from WHYY's last membership drive.
If you had access to YStream, then you missed out on all our witty banter.
And if you'd like to miss out on it again, you can.
Act now and pledge for YStream. It's WHYY-FM without the pledge break.
That's right, Ed, but this offer won't last.
The last day to sign up for this thank you gift is January 29th. For details, visit whyy.org/YStream.
Thank you. Tonight, it's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's State of the Union address. I'm Melissa Block. Join me for in-depth analysis and reaction from members of Congress. You'll also hear the Republicans' response to the president's speech. It's an NPR News special, President Obama's State of the Union address.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking about a classical music program started in Venezuela called El Sistema. It has changed the lives of thousands of children in that country, and it's taking root in this country as well. One of our guests, trumpeter Stanford Thompson, uses El Sistema's philosophy and approach for his Play on Philly program, teaching music to students at St. Francis de Sales Catholic School in West Philadelphia. He joins us along with Jamie Bernstein, who's making a documentary, El Sistema USA, and Tricia Tunstall, author of Changing Lives, Gustavo Dudamel, El Sistema, and the Transformative Power of Music. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stanford, what's been the hardest thing so far for you in this program?
Wow. Mainly the work. We see our kids every day for 3 hours, each weekday and throughout the year. And, you know, we're constantly reevaluating the work that we do. We're also evaluating what happens to these kids away from their instruments. That consumes a large chunk of our day. And, really the hardest part is just keeping the focus mm-hmm. on what these kids need.
And are you surprised about these kids' lives? I mean, Philadelphia is a city with a lot of poor people, and this is a neighborhood in Philadelphia where there are a lot of poor kids.
Yes, but I would like to think that these are some of the richest kids in the city, you know, to have this experience, you know, to play music for almost 650 hours this year. The opportunity to work with world-class conductors like Marin Alsop and Rossi Melenoff and Sir Simon Rattle. To play in all of the best venues in the city, to be able to travel. I think these are the richest kids in the city.
You know, we can hear, you just got a thumbs up from Jamie Bernstein, but you can also hear the kind of passion that Stanford Thompson has. And Jamie, I'm thinking of your father. I'm thinking of those children's concerts and other concerts that he did where that passion that he had for music was magical and infectious.
Yep, that's what I grew up around. So you can imagine that when my father was no longer with us, he died in 1990, you know, we all missed him a lot. He left a lot behind, his own music and his recordings, and so there's still a sense of him in the world very much. But you can imagine how excited I was when I found an environment that was kind of propagating that very energy that I grew up with, because that's how I feel about music, too. Mm-hmm. And that's why... now I also make it my business to communicate my own excitement about music to others. So El Sistema was just the ticket. And Stanford is just the guy to be recreating it in his own way here in the United States.
Let me go back to you, if I could, Tricia, and even going back to Venezuela, this program's been around for, what, 36 years now. You always worry about things like changing people's lives, transforming the world. Has it done that?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And I have to refer to Stanford's comment about being slightly skeptical. When I first heard about this program through Jamie Bernstein, my friend, and went to see it for myself, I did go with some skepticism about these extraordinary stories. I found, in fact, that what I saw was more extraordinary than what I had heard. And my skepticism could not hold up. The number of, you know, the hundreds of nucleos around the country, the thousands and thousands of kids who are involved every day, not only in just making music together, but in making music joyously, passionately, and with a drive for excellence, I had absolutely never seen anything like that before. So that is, in fact, the moment when I decided I needed to write the book about this program, both in Venezuela and here, because this was a story that really needed to be told.
I mean, in certain ways, it's a simple but a complicated story. One is that we're talking about kids working 6 days a week, mm-hmm. 12 hours a day, and working together.
Yes.
And many times people take their music lessons, they take them individually. This is people learning music and playing music together.
That's right. That's what's going to be a challenge, I think, to programs and people who are trying to bring the Sistema here, because we do, as a culture, really have an ingrained habit of thinking of music education as your solitary music lesson and then your solitary conservatory career and then your competitive job search. That's sort of the career path. This is an entirely different concept of what it means to be immersed in music education. Mm-hmm. This is being part of a community in which when one person succeeds, everyone succeeds, and in which you really learn together.
And is that something that, yeah, I mean, this is part of the heart of the philosophy, Stanford, which is to create that sense of community among the players.
Correct. I mean, when the kids learn together, when they all perform together, it takes off that competitive edge, mm-hmm. you know, and it puts every single kid in the driver's seat. So we find a way. That's our thing. We don't do assessment tests. Any kid that wants to participate, they have the same opportunity to get in, and we find a way to keep them engaged. So if we have to rewrite a part, we mm-hmm. rewrite a part. Mm-hmm. It's about the kids going through this process. And they can learn an incredible amount by just standing in a straight line, coming out and bowing, putting their instrument up in playing position, putting it back down in rest position, bowing again and walking off the stage. I mean, going through that process, that's where we see that social transformation happen. It's not necessarily in playing every single note perfectly. We don't worry about every single note. You know, we want these kids to do this work together.
And I don't know whether this is part of it. And perhaps it's too early to tell. Are you seeing some results in other classes that they might be taking, or in just the atmosphere in the school? Is it too soon to know whether it's having that kind of effect?
Oh, I mean, we knew after a couple of weeks.
Did you?
You know, when parents were coming to us saying that, you know, their kids want to take home their instruments, you know, they find the TV not to be as stimulating. That was a big surprise. Then at the end of the year, we saw, as we were comparing the grades between the kids in the after-school tutoring program and the kids that were in the after-school music program, mm-hmm. which the music kids only received an extra 2 hours a week. Compared to the kids in the after-school tutoring program. But after we looked at their grades, we saw that the kids in the music program were outperforming those that were in the tutoring program. You know, we're working on reading notes and, you know, playing music. The kids in the tutoring program were working on bubbling in the right answers on the test. It's taking those kids through that process. And then, you know, when we can put 110 kids in the room with one conductor, and have those types of results away from their instruments in the classroom and at home, I think that's pretty cost effective.
And as you're saying that, I'm thinking, I mean, school districts have to make tough decisions, but you think about decisions that school districts make, which is, where are we going to cut? And often what goes is the music program, the arts program. And you just made the, you know, the best commercial for how arts can help everything else.
Right. But it also matters how you do it as well. You know, I mean, providing the immersion that we do with these kids, I mean, that's what makes the biggest difference. So there's a big difference between 45 minutes a week and 15 hours a week. And it's allowing these kids to learn the transferable practical skills that they need to be successful. I mean, that's what this is about.
And we're talking about, what, 3 to 6 in the afternoon, something like that?
Yes.
Which is, that's a long day for
It's a
kids.
Long day for a kid, but you'll be amazed. They still have energy.
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. Do you want to add anything to that, Tricia?
Just what Stanford is saying is reminding me of being in Venezuela, seeing Núcleos up close, a number of the Núcleos, which is the Núcleo is what they call their local Sistema program. And Jamie and I had tours of many Núcleos, and I went back and toured more. Stanford toured some with us. I can remember many leaders of Núcleos, like more than 3 or 4, consistently saying to me at the end when they were saying goodbye, remember, we may not be creating professional musicians, but we are creating citizens. Mm. That word citizen came up again and again and again. And when Stanford talks about the sense of order, of social discipline, of social harmony that he's creating as well as learning music, that's where it is. That's that piece of creating citizens.
You want to add to that, Jamie Bernstein?
Yeah, well, you know, just from a purely practical viewpoint, one aspect of a program like Play on Philly that makes it compelling is that it kind of takes the whole discussion of providing arts education out of the box of sticking it into the school day, where we know that they don't have the budget, and we know that the arts are always the first thing that get cut when the budget gets tight. This is a program that actually stands outside of the school day, and therefore it doesn't threaten the school model. The school model could probably use some improvement anyway, but it is, I think it's refreshing that this is a different approach that doesn't threaten this problematic school model.
And that's Jamie Bernstein. She's a concert narrator, writer, broadcaster, and she's making a documentary called El Sistema USA. And that documentary focuses on the work of our other guest, Stanford Thompson. He's a trumpeter, executive director of Play on Philly, which is a program at Francis DeSales Elementary School in West Philadelphia. And also with us is Tricia Tunstall, and she's written a new book called Changing Lives, Gustavo Dudamel, El Sistema, and the Transformative Power of Music. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stanford, you said the violin was too hard. I'm curious about how you gravitated to the trumpet.
Well, my parents are both music educators, and I went to my dad and I told my dad, hey, I want to play trombone. This was when I was 7 years old, and yeah. He told me, well, I'm sorry, your arms are too short. So here, you know, take this trumpet. When your arms get longer, then we'll switch you to trombone. I mean, several years later, I never thought about it. And then I look at my kids now, and our kids are playing trombone, and I'm sitting there telling myself, hey, I could have done this. But but no, I mean, trumpet was a part of my life when I was 8 years old, and it was something that I soon identified myself with. Mm-hmm. And then later on said, hey, I'm pretty good at this. So I figured, hey, if a school like Curtis would think that I'm good enough to get in, then maybe I should do this.
And did you have individual lessons? Did you play with bands? I'm curious about your musical education.
So, I mean, the first 5 years, I took private lessons. My dad arranged for me to study with Gordon Vernick at Georgia State University. And I'm not too sure why I stayed engaged 5 years of literally going in for an hour, pretty much getting beat up by my teacher in a very loving way, and then coming back home for the other 6 days to try to figure this out by myself.
And how old were you?
I was 9 years old when I started uh-huh. taking lessons. So, you know, I wasn't good enough until I was 14 to join the club. And, you know, to watch us put these kids as a member of this new club from the first day they pick up their instrument, I think is really exciting. So when I started playing in youth ensembles in Atlanta, I mean, that's where I grew up. I mean, that's when I really started to gravitate mm-hmm. to wanting to be a musician.
And when you look at your students, are there ones that just jump out at you and you can see this, you know, this emerging talent?
Oh, yes. I mean, you know, several students. I mean, there's one student that comes to mind. His name is Zebediah Coombs. He's a violist. He's an eighth grader. And about 2 months into us starting this program, he comes saying, I want to go to Curtis. And we're looking at him. We're like, okay, you know, dude, do you know how hard it is? But, I mean, he's determined. He's very, very determined. He practices really hard. Every time I call his house, he is practicing. Wow. And it's great to see him identify himself with being a violist. And last month, we took him to Curtis to have a lesson with Roberto Diaz, you mm-hmm. know, and Roberto called and said, hey, let's have a lesson with him. So we took a tour of the new facility and the old building, and it was really amazing to watch Zebediah walk through that school like he was a student. Mm-hmm. And you know what? If he doesn't get to Curtis, it's okay. I mean, I think him going through this process, he's going to learn a lot about himself. And I mean, just like the rest of the kids, I mean, I could tell you 15 other stories like this.
And your documentary, Jamie, it sounds like it focuses on a couple of the students in this program.
It does. I wish we had time to tell all their stories, but we have to choose a few. And in fact, Zebediah is one of the kids that we're following. And we've already seen an amazing transformation in Z, he's known as.
Yes.
He has lots of dreads. that were almost always for year one in front of his face. We never really saw his face until this year. All of a sudden, he pulled his dreads back in a ponytail, and his face is there for everybody to see, and we suddenly saw the light in his eyes when he's playing his viola and learning a new piece. It was like he was on fire. We couldn't believe it, and you can really see it in our footage.
And it's interesting how that transformation probably told you something about what was going on inside of him.
It did. It was we almost couldn't believe what we were seeing in our footage, that this transformation was really taking place in this kid. I remember the very first day we were there, day one of the program, and we mm-hmm. asked a few kids, what instrument do you want to play? And this is already, you know, in our little 5-minute trailer. And we actually, by chance, had Zebediah behind all his dreads saying,
him, yes.
I really, really like guitar. You can't see his face or anything.
That's great. And where do you get your instruments? I'm curious, Stanford.
Many of them are donated. And the rest, you know, we purchase. But, you know, we work with some really good partners and distributors that help us get access to instruments at a much more affordable cost.
And Tricia, we've been talking about El Sistema, this program here in Philly, and there's another program as well, I should add. But is this beginning to spread not just to the United States, but also to other countries?
It's spreading just like wildfire. It is amazing how fast it's spreading. I started writing my book two years ago, I suppose. And at that point, maybe there were 3 or 4 programs in the United States that had known about El Sistema and were modeling on them. During the time I was writing, I could not write fast enough to keep up. With the new program started every week, one in, you know, really in almost every state, many cities in the country, and of course abroad. It's in many countries in Europe, many countries in South America. It's even, there are rumblings in Korea, Australia. It's spreading very, very fast. And I think the time just must be right for people who are impassioned about music and art and social change to see that there can be an amazing connection there.
And I'd ask Stanford the same question, but why classical music? Why do you think, I mean, why is that important, do you think?
You know, it's probably important in different ways in different places. In Venezuela, in the beginning, it was important because it was seen as such an elitist art form. It was played by rich foreigners for rich Venezuelans. And the rest of the Venezuelan people were really shut out of it. So one of Abreu's great aims was to open that world up of incredible richness to everyone, to all the Venezuelan young people. And in the United States and in other places, it doesn't quite mean that. It doesn't have quite as much elitist taint to it, but it is very marginalized. And I think what makes it so rich for an El Sistema program is that it involves such large ensemble playing fairly complicated music and figuring out, I mean, other ensembles do that sort of thing. A big band jazz ensemble would do that. I think it doesn't have to be exclusively classical music, but classical music, more than any other music, involves lots of people playing together complicated, beautiful, eloquent, expressive music. And that's an amazing thing for those kids to be inside of.
Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Tricia Tunstall, author of a book called Changing Lives. Also with us is Jamie Bernstein, making a documentary called El Sistema USA, and Stanford Thompson, executive director of Play on Philly. And he is working with students at Francis DeSales Catholic Elementary School in West Philadelphia. And we'll take some calls at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Margaret Kuo, wishing you a happy and healthy New Year. We're celebrating in all my restaurants, 4710 and 2012, the Year of the Dragon, with a special Year of the Dragon menu. Margaret Kuo's restaurants support WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, how the Glock, the lightweight, high-capacity magazine Austrian pistol, became the gun of choice for American criminals and law enforcement agents and found its way into crime movies, TV shows, and rap lyrics. We talk with Paul Barrett, author of Glock, The Rise of America's Gun. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. President Obama will deliver his State of the Union. We'll ask voters across the country, what do you want to hear? Also, the Oscar nominations are announced. Which films made the coveted shortlist, and will you have seen them? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
"10,000 Villages in Ephrata" supports WHYY, hosting their annual rug event starting January 27th, featuring the Fairtrade Bunyad Rug Collection of over 1,500 hand-knotted rugs. Online at rugs.10,000villages.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking about El Sistema with Tricia Tunstall, with Jamie Bernstein and Stanford Thompson, and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Bernadette from Kennett Square to join us. Bernadette, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have Bernadette? Well, actually, Bernadette had a question about why not rock music? And we were just talking about classical music. Perhaps I can toss that to you, Stanford.
Well, we do have a component in our program that exposes kids to all types of music. And, you know, I think the question can also be, you know, why not other disciplines as well?
Or the jazz.
Right. So, I mean, we've started this year doing a lot of jazz, you know, incorporating, again, lots of world music, rock music. So it is part of the program. But again, in the lens of trying to get as many kids participating as possible, the orchestra is just one very effective tool to use. So we'll see more rock music in the future.
That's fair enough. Jamie Bernstein, I'm reminded of a concert that your father did, Leonard Bernstein, where he introduced Janis Ian to the world. And that was a really, I thought, a turning point, not just for her career, but for this classical music conductor to introduce us to this, you know, rock and roll folk singer.
Right. Well, back then, I think people did still have this very elitist attitude about classical music. And my father really loved music, period. And he did not make a distinction, a value judgment about one genre of music over another. And I think that was one of his biggest contributions to our world, was that he legitimized all different kinds of music by incorporating them in his own appearances with the New York Philharmonic on television and in other appearances as well.
Stanford, if I can go back to you, and even going back to that first day, so you have a group of children, they've signed up for the program, they're going to be playing an instrument, they choose a violin. What's the next step? How do you introduce them? How do you get them comfortable with a particular instrument? I know you have teachers who work with you on this program.
Right. Well, I mean, that's one balance that we have to always make sure that we are in line with. But the whole thing was that I wanted the teachers to walk the kids through the process on how to become a good musician. So from the very first day, they're learning how to take the instrument out of the cases and properly care for it, how to hold it properly, you know, how to even produce a sound and understanding. And it's very interesting to see as a child really experiments with how sound is made and how they can be in control of that sound. But that has to be done within some type of boundaries. Because if not, a kid can very easily get discouraged because it's not instant. So there's always this fine balance between taking them through that process.
And I'm thinking also, Tricia, about this program in Venezuela. And I think, as you all have said, it requires a lot of dedication on the part of these students who are dedicating all this time and energy to music. And I'm curious about whether it has we've been talking about how it's influenced a school. Do you think is it fair to say it's influenced a country?
Oh, I think it is fair to say that. I heard a statistic recently, and I can't even remember the source of the statistic, but it was a finding that at least 5% of the Venezuelan population has had direct involvement in El Sistema. Now, I don't know how that figure was arrived at, but I don't have any trouble believing it, given that there are almost 400,000 children in that program now, that it's very teacher-intensive. So in each, you know, in each class of 10 kids, there will be three teachers. And then those teachers will have directors, and the directors will have regional components. I mean, it's a huge network that really covers a lot of the country. And it's got graduates now. It's gone through several generations. Many of those kids who were in the first generation of the first orchestras grew up to be the teachers of the next generations. They have the advantage that Stanford and people in who are starting programs in this country don't have, of teachers who automatically know what the Sistema process is because that's how they learned it.
And what do you look for in your teachers? I mean, there are teachers and there are teachers.
Right. The dedication to share, you know, their love for music, their talent for music. I mean, that's number one. And you can figure that out after having coffee with them for 10 minutes, you know, what they're about. And then just a high level of musicianship, because that's extremely important. Because that's exactly what the kids see as a model, you know, not just how they are as a person, but how they are as a musician. And for the kids to understand that we take it very seriously, that this is how, you know, we make money. This is how we support ourselves. But this is what we're also passionate about, with spending time with them.
And they have been conducted by Marin Alsop.
Correct. And Rasa Milanoff so far this season.
And what is that like?
I mean, we're all nervous, you know.
I can imagine.
We're like, okay, you know, Marin has conducted and Rossin has conducted, you know, some really fine orchestras. But what we see is that not only are they providing a great experience for our kids, but we also provide a great experience for them as well. And as we prepare for the kids to, you know, take the stage with Simon Rattle in April, it's that same type of, you know, give and take. So, I mean, it makes us all nervous, but it rises the level of expectations.
And as the daughter of a conductor, anything you want to add to that, Jamie Burse? And then we'll try our callers again.
Well, I only am sad that my dad isn't around today to see a program like this and to get the chance himself to interact with these kids. He would have gotten the biggest kick in the world out of it. It's everything he ever meant, you know, is to be able to share that kind of excitement and joy with young people and watch it come back from them.
Let me see what Christine from West Philadelphia has to say. And Christine, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I want to donate a 3/4 size violin. Who do I call? It's in perfect condition.
Oh, well, that's for you, Stanford Thompson.
You can call 215-531. 4876, and we'll be happy to walk you through that process.
Will you repeat the number?
215-531 4876.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Christine. Thank you for this program. It sounds so inspiring.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you're inspired. Thanks for calling in. Let's see what Charlotte from Lansdale has to say. And Charlotte.
Hi, Terry. I'm in Lansdowne, by the way.
Lansdowne, sorry.
For over 20 years, have been working with the orchestra. I host family and school concerts and have for 17 years been hosting concerts in New York and Carnegie Hall, family concerts. I just wanted to make a comment about what I believe is often an underestimation on the part of people of particularly inner city children's ability to engage with specifically classical music. And there's a history and a legacy here in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia public schools had a very strong music program in the 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. and produced people like Booker Rowe, who's a violinist in the orchestra, Renard Edwards, who's a violist, John Blake Jr., a well-known jazz violinist, but John had a classical background, a classical training, Diane Monroe. And that children can and will, if we give them the opportunity and the exposure, commit themselves to a disciplined, creative, cooperative, engaged process. It's self-empowering. It's affirming. It exposes kids to a world and a sensibility that's much broader than perhaps the geographic or economic context in which they live, and plants the seeds for the possibilities of who they can be as a human being in the world, not just a child in this neighborhood. If I can do this, if I can accomplish this, what else can I do?
Well, Charlotte, those are inspiring words. Let me give Stanford Thompson a chance to weigh in.
It's Jennifer, correct?
It's Charlotte.
Oh, Charlotte. Sorry,
okay.
Excuse me. Thank you for your call. I mean, the work that we're doing It's nothing new here in Philadelphia. We've seen this process through the Settlement Music School and the Curtis Institute of Music of providing a musical experience to enrich the lives of young people. And we see the effect that that has had on the Philadelphia Orchestra, even on the school system, you know, throughout the years. We can't do this work alone. And, you know, I hope that the work that we do, the work that other great institutions around the city does, that we can, you know, work more together to provide more of these experiences for youth around the city. So I hope that this inspires more people, just like it inspires us to do more for the kids that we serve. So thank you for your comments.
Yeah, thank you, Charlotte, for calling in. But she said that we underestimate these kids. You agree with that?
Oh yes. I mean, certainly you give them the opportunity and they run with it, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't have anything to lose. And, you know, I feel that it's my responsibility as an artist, you know, to share this and to promote. I certainly agree with it.
Well, you know, Jamie Bernstein, I was looking at the piece of your documentary that's online, and one of the teachers in the school says, you know, we had 5 shootings or 10 shootings in the neighborhood in the last, I don't know, couple of days. I mean, this is also the reality that these young people live in.
It is the reality. And in fact, just last week, we were with Zebediah in his neighborhood of West Philly. And it was a very tough neighborhood. And I worry about him walking through that neighborhood every day with his viola case, which is candy apple red. And I worry not just about Zebediah, but, you know, all the kids, you know, who have this extra layer of preoccupation in their daily lives.
Do you worry about them as well?
Yeah, every kid we worry about. And I think that really every child, I think we all should be worrying about, because it doesn't matter if they're white or black, if they're rich or poor. They all have the same ability to fall into the crack, you know, to fall into the deep end and not be able to keep their head above water. Every single kid, and we try our hardest to keep them engaged, and we're, wow. I mean, just thinking about the kids.
Sure.
I mean, because
these are real kids with real lives,
yep.
Hopes and dreams.
And they really deserve this.
Yeah. You want to add anything to that, Trisha?
I wanted to just speak to one thing Stanford said, which is that you said the program is not new, that it's been happening it happens in very different forms and guises, and that you're building things with a lot of other people. And I think that's true, but I wanted also, I think it is true that in this country there are many places where people have had this vision. However, one of the reasons I wanted to write the book, Changing Lives, is because I really would love to see a coherent network, national network, a national recognition and awareness of one another. And that makes it more than isolated programs. That could actually make this a movement, and a movement to help needy children through music would be an amazing thing if we really conceived of what we're doing nationally. So that's sort of what I'm want to bring to the attention of people.
Let me try. Let's try Marge from Bala Cynwyd joining us on Radio Times. Marge, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I taught at Morristown Friends School, and my colleague, who was a violinist, and I developed a program with others to teach all second graders Suzuki violin. And we found the program gave the children many gifts, including discipline, working with others, and many strengths in appreciating music and being able to pick out the patterns of music, and that helped them pick out patterns in math. Working together, using the words to correct somebody's whatever is a big thing, and how you were going to say that to your partner. It still goes on today, and it was an incredible program. So when you came in from recess every day, you played the violin for 15 minutes.
Oh, that's great. Marge, let me give Stanford a chance to weigh in. Anything you want to add to that?
It's very beautiful to hear about these programs. They're happening all over the city. Mm-hmm. I really applaud the people that move those initiatives forward.
Did you ever play an instrument, Jamie Bernstein?
I did. And, you know, I took piano lessons for years, and I did not like my piano lessons.
Oh, you did
and
not?
And I never practiced. And I used to get stomach aches because it was so clear to me that these frogs and spiders coming out of my fingers had nothing to do with the music that I was hearing around me as a result of, you know, going to young people's concerts all the time. So I was very discouraged. And when I see programs like Play on Philly, I'm a little wistful that I didn't get a chance to have this group experience. I would have so much loved being in a group, a community of other music makers who were all doing it together with me. I think that would have worked better for me, actually.
Oh, that's very interesting. And are you a musician as well?
Yes, I am a pianist and a piano teacher, and experienced a lot of the kind of frustration Jamie's talking about in terms of the isolation of my practicing, of my performing, of my learning. There's a wonderful story that Abreu tells of his childhood piano lessons, which are really the sort of platonic dream of piano lessons, in that his piano teacher had 7 pianos all arranged in a circle, and she arranged music. She arranged symphonies, concertos, sonatas for 7 children of varying skills to sit around and play at those pianos together.
Wow.
So in that childhood experience was actually born the seed of the idea of the Sistema. That's one of my favorite stories that I was able to capture.
And so we're almost out of time. What's your vision for your program, Play on Philly?
Well,
we have you back in 20 years. What do you hope?
Well, I mean, you know, by 2020, we're looking to have 10 sites throughout the city of Philadelphia. Probably within the next week or two, we will launch our second site at Lee Elementary School in West Philadelphia. We'll start there with 25 children in a choral setting. And from there, we'll continue to build. The sky's the limit.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you all, 3 of you, for joining us today on Radio Times. Stanford Thompson, Executive Director of Play on Philly. Jamie Bernstein, working on a documentary featuring Play on Philly called El Sistema USA. And Tricia Tunstall, she's the author of a new book called Changing Lives, Gustavo Dudamel, El Sistema, and the Transformative Power of Music. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show. Jonathan Best helping us out this week. The show is produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty Leswing, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.